Welcome to the Gene Oliver Podcast, where we talk all things business, art, and lifestyle. This is your podcast for building a more creative life. I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to GeneOliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at GeneOliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Gene Oliver, and today I'm talking with artist and author Sabrina Ward Harrison. Sabrina is a poet, a truth spiller, color collector, gentle guide, artist in many forms, and seer of beauty all around. Sabrina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Jean. It's an honor to be here.
Well, before we dive in, will you share a little bit about yourself and your business?
Yes, my name is Sabrina. I am an author of Spilling Open, Brave on the Rocks, Messy Thrilling Life, The Truth in the Questions, and The Stories Happening. And I teach creative liberation through writing and color exploration and unfolding.
Beautiful. Yeah. How are you going to remember all your titles if you keep writing more books?
I said them because normally I don't say them, and I just think I'm trying to honor them more because I just end up like, I said the five books and like, I'll just give them, they're sort of like my five kids.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I want to know about Sabrina Ward Harrison, what she was like as a little girl, because I always find these early glimpses into a person to be so fascinating and so telling of who they were then and then who they become. And so can you tell us a little bit about like what you were like as a kid?
Well, I love that question about childhood because I really do think so much is shown with how we were raised and where we were raised. And I was born in Montreal, Quebec, and I was 1975, so it was in the mid-70s. And one of my memories of me as a little girl was, and it shows also the parenting, the parents that I had raised me really were a big influence to me on me and my creative freedom. I had this illustration on the wall beside my bed of this sort of fairy in a tree holding like another little girl or something. And it was this, you know, old illustration. And I had this idea in my mind, like I was going to fly to the cloud across the other neighbor's yard, the cloud that was up in the sky. And I would just tie myself and my cat Daffodil to a kite and just head out and have like a picnic out there. And I remember like making the hole for the cat, and I thought, well, just go out there. And I went up to the balcony, and I must have been maybe three or four. And I thought I would fly off the balcony. And my dad came out, and he said, Sprout, that's what he calls me still to this day. He said, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just going to, and I tell him my plan. He said, oh, wow, that's exciting. Do you want to come down and have some lunch first before you go? It's just that sense it wasn't like you're crazy or stupid. Yeah. That's ridiculous. I was like, okay, yeah. And then, you know, it somehow was deterred off into doing something else and exploring and that kind of unleashed that freedom to, you know, invent and explore and invent projects and ideas. And I felt like that was really cultivated as a little girl. And I remember my dad putting just maybe only about 3 feet worth of bricks in the backyard and painting them yellow. And it was my yellow brick road, and just was just some bricks painted yellow. But I thought, oh, this is so magical. I bought the yellow brick road. Mm-hmm. So that really felt like it was an example of the creativity that was nurtured when I was very young.
You were seen.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And yeah. And I think everything we talk about and the answers you will give are because from a young age, you were seen. And it doesn't mean that if anybody's listening and they can say, I have never been seen or I wasn't seen, it doesn't mean you can't find your way to that person, right? But man, it sure makes your road so different.
and to feel seen and loved from such a young age. And so that's really beautiful. And such a tribute to your father, to your parents, to who they were, that they not only, what does that say about them that they could see you so clearly? And so, well, how have you learned to embrace who you are, your creativity, your quirks, your hand, and a million other facets of who you are? It sounds like because of your beautiful beginning, maybe that was easier, but were you always accepting of these parts of yourself, or was it a journey?
Oh, it continues to be a journey. I think that that sense is, you know, and I think we're born with our issues and our things that are our kind of crazy mind going judgments and so on. You know, even though I was raised with, you know, a mom who was passionate about, you know, parent education, and she was passionate about, you know, helping parents really nurture and support their children, I still was, you know, not wanting to feel how I felt, and, you know, just all the insecurities, because we moved from Montreal to Southern California. So this is the shock of like suddenly being in this culture that I did not resonate with. But the pressures upon myself at that age and as a teenager were just, I put a lot of pressure on myself, and, you know, always wanted to look different than I looked. I didn't like my freckles and I had short hair, and it just was something that I resisted. And I think then slowly came into as I discovered my own way to express myself, because I wasn't like a cheerleader or playing sports or wasn't really a huge academic person. But when I discovered photography and taught myself that in the back of a science, in the dark room, but in behind a science room class, and listening to you too, and developing my pictures for the first time, was the beginning of getting out of my head and my ego place of self-critical voices and into the self-expression and paying attention to what was the emotions around me and trying to capture those.
Well, so it sounds like maybe that first project or adventure that clearly told you that this was it for you might have been the photography.
Yeah, I think when I, so for me, I didn't, I was kind of thrown up to an art school up in Northern California, California College of the Arts, by an art teacher who was like, get your head out of your ass and get up there to art school. But because I wasn't someone who could draw well or paint well, but I had this longing to combine photography and words together. It was sort of the era of the Nike ads, like the just do it, you're your mother's daughter, and you're these really powerful statements beside these beautiful portraits. And I remember that a really defining project for me was, I was 19, I was at my first year, and, you know, there a lot of people were there getting their degrees and they were coming back to school, so they were much older. And they were saying, 19, so great, you know, I wish I was 19. And to me, looking around, the women that I knew that were 19 were dealing with all these deep issues. And I decided to do this documentary project where I was photographing the women around me that were 19 and then having them write what they saw in these images of themselves and putting the two things together. It was called A Descent into Limbo. And it was just honoring the truth of the emotions that we all carry. And I just was passionate from that early stage of just really holding the space for people's emotions and unfolding and self-acceptance.
What's interesting, because you were seen, you were actually able to maybe be more open to seeing others.
Yeah.
Think about that. Think about that from a young age, that you were really capturing people. And man, your gift of words was such an innate gift in you, even from a young age, that even the title of that first project and just how you think and just how you gathered people and gathered ideas. I think it's just really fascinating, but a beautiful part of just an authentic part of who you are. And you can kind of see this thread from a young age and then to those first projects, even what you're doing now, right? Mm-hmm. And even how you're gathering people and seeing people. And so, well, as you've gotten older, how have you learned to harness and focus creative ideas into true works of art, online content, books, and more? And how has that changed as you have aged and grown from maybe those first projects to now?
That's a big question. And I want to mention one thing about the title of that. The title of that project came from Maurice Sendak, the wonderful Marie Sendak, who described his creative process as a descent into limbo. Mm. And it actually then became part of the introduction to Spilling Open, was me talking about, you know, saying about Marie Sendak describing his creative process that way, and saying that describes my whole life at that time at 21, was it is a descent into limbo. Just who am I? Who am I becoming? And yeah, I think my passion was making people feel, if I could help one person feel less alone and read something and resonate and say, me too, I feel like that. And there were so many things in the world I couldn't do and wasn't good at. But I knew I could help. If that was something I could do, would be to help hold the space for someone else to open and go, oh my gosh, I feel like that. And it was before blogging even. So it was the beginning of the late 90s when Spilling Open was made. So I remember feeling like, I can't believe I'm admitting these feelings, because there was no one else. I mean, it was Anise Nin was someone else whose journals I'd read, but there wasn't any contemporary, anyone young that was sharing their journals or their writing, because the internet wasn't up and happening at that point in that way. So it was really a big deal to share that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in regards to that question, I think it's the way it's evolved for me. I mean, it's taken lots of different forms, but what excites me now is helping other people, guiding them. I have a course called Liberate about creating the book they want to find. And so it feels really great to help guide other people to bring that forward. Cause I'm so passionate about the experience of a book, the intimacy of a book. There's lots of forms of art, but something about the one-on-one experience of a book and the sequencing of it. And it's sort of like a film. It's not about just cramming a lot of, you know, stuff into it, but it's the page to page experience. So.
Well, and even for a book, whether it becomes wildly successful outside of your own life or not, is not even the point. Mm-mm. What it takes to gather those thoughts, what it takes to put your thoughts really into the words that you want them to have, and and to share it in that creative way, the biggest gift is to yourself. And so when you can hold that, and I've seen many people that have taken your book writing class that have really been able to get things out in a very tangible way that I know has been just... For some people, it's exciting and it's beautiful and it's a part of their expression. And for other people, it has been true healing. So it is an incredible gift of what you're giving people. Well, I have a question about your handwriting, because I love it so much, and everybody does. So your handwriting and your art and your books is very recognizable. And I have found that many people don't love or embrace their own handwriting. I love handwriting as an artist because it's unique. It's our own marks. It's that something special and authentic that can be incorporated into our work. So I want to know if you have always loved your handwriting, and then did you work to come up with this now recognizable style, or was it there from the beginning?
Great question. The way my handwriting kind of ended up that way is because, first of all, I'm not a good speller. And so there's oftentimes when I'd be working on a project in school where my mom would be looking, then there'd be some, I'd supposed to be writing the title, and I'd realize it couldn't all fit, or maybe there's a spelling mistake. And so I was sort of changing the letter to sort of be an A instead of an E. And it started out sort of trying to fit stuff into something that I didn't, you know, clearly measure first. And I think that was the beginning of this, different sizes, capital letters, smaller letters. And then I discovered, you know, working with pen and ink and a nib, and, you know, and then it would be like I was be writing and then a big splotch of ink would drop out. So I'd kind of have to work with that, and it would lead to just a bit more of a script. And that's kind of how it evolved. It's its own language now. And I think, you know, people have said, oh, make a font of it, but it's so connected to my voice. It would be really weird if there was ever my handwriting, you know,
when you were first writing it and when you were using it and when you were trying to figure it out. And I love the reason behind the different sizes and shapes and everything. But did you see it in the beginning and go, that looks amazing? That's cool.
I thought it was cool because I've always been passionate about fonts and typography. So in school, when I was in my typography class, everyone was working with these different typefaces, and I started kind of combining type and handwriting. And, you know, honestly, partly because I wasn't taking my design tools class, which I wish I had taken because it was teaching all the basics about, you know, the computer. And, you know, it's always been a sort of a challenge since then because I never just got the basics of, you know, Photoshop and working with layout programs. But so the way I was getting around that was handwriting it instead of laying it out on the computer. So everyone's turning in these slick printed out, you know, graphic posters, and my posters, you know, all collaged together and Xeroxed, and that was just out of like inventing my way to make, and it really was effective and really works. So, yeah. Well,
how did you journey and change to walk out your gifts as a young woman with your first book at 23 through using and walking out your creativity now? Because at 23, I think many would say, gosh, I was just barely starting to know who I am. And here you, when you were 19 or when you were younger, like when you were gathering women, and then at 23 to have your first book published, what is that even like for you creatively to take that idea, and then how do you make it into a reality? Because you're still doing that now. How did you walk that out at 23 to take an idea, to take a concept, to take your art, and then to bring it to fruition?
So is that sort of about the making of how I made my first book, or more?
Maybe even how do you walk out your gifts in a way that brings, it doesn't always have to bring results, right? Creativity is a journey in itself, yeah. But for you to be a working artist, you've had to have, that's consistency, at least in some phases of your creativity, mm-hmm. right? That's mm-hmm. showing up and following through. How did you know how to do that at 23?
It's interesting. I always felt I had no idea what I was doing. I always felt like, who the heck can I ask how to do it? Mm-hmm. Who can I turn to for, you know, business guidance? Because I wasn't in school and I wasn't working, or, I mean, I was in school, and then, but then I went on, you know, on to do a sort of independent study to finish the book. But then after, you know, I have this book that comes into the world, but I don't have coworkers where I can say, hey, Julie, how do you handle that conversation with Greg? Or how do you ask for this? And so I had no guidance. And when it came to just next steps professionally, mm-hmm. it was just, you know, really, and I got really hard on myself about that because I just felt really isolated and I didn't know really what to do. So I made, it's all unfolded as it should. I truly believe that. But it was really, at that time, it was hard to, as your phrase, I love that, walk it out. What one thing I'd start my first teaching was while I was making Spilling Open, because I needed sort of a summer job to support myself while I was doing it. I invented a class called The Art of Becoming Yourself, and it was geared towards girls, sort of preteen, before they sort of lose their wildness. Mm. And I was going to teach it out of my sunroom in Berkeley, and I made these little packages and put them all over the place in Berkeley. And people were like, moms were like, what is this? Is this a dog sitting service? What? And they kind of came and signed up, you know, feeling kind of bad for me. But the concept was that it was going to be using like rub down type and ink and all kind of alternative supplies and journals. And these girls, some boys were in the class too. I mean, we're on my floor and my upstairs. I was only renting the upstairs of an old funky house in Berkeley, and they were loving it, and they're using, you know, inks everywhere, and then their moms would come and say, we need this class. Yeah. So really that was the beginning. I mean, the passion, when you talk about like what's that feeling internally when you know, it's always been in teaching, it's always been in the experience of other holding the space for other people. Mm-hmm. that's what's felt the most comfortable and natural to me. So that's always been that's teaching has always been what's sort of ridden me through all of these years.
And isn't it true? It doesn't matter. I love what you said about the wildness.
Yeah.
Because that's so true in our daughters and our sons and us as grown women.
Yeah.
That like what, who hasn't said like, what happened to me?
Right.
Or like, I want to get that back. Or right. Why am I not doing those things that were wild and free and fun? Yeah. And unexpected. And so that is not just something to be, I mean, it should be, oh, so protected in our young people, but it should be protected in ourselves too.
Yes.
And that's just a beautiful word. And I love just the heart behind even that class. And so, well, as you step out more boldly into your gifts, as you have gotten older and wiser, and as you create more and you get more just comfortable and at rest in what is truly yours, you're also becoming a guide for others. Mm. So what weight of responsibility does that hold for you? And we'll start there, and then I have a question after that.
Well, it's an honor to be a guide, and I think if there's a sense of vast permission, I hope to give people as far as the way to do it or the I didn't really articulate this answer. Do you say as a guide, maybe as an artist or as a teaching or just,
I think, just as somebody who creates a space for people to come.
Yeah.
So, and you've been doing that, like I said, you've been doing that in college as a young woman and artist. You do it now in your online classes. You mm-hmm. do it in your books. You get as giving someone permission, you know, I almost think that you have a heart very much, and I've talked about this a lot in different ways over the years, but there are certain people that do it well, and I think you do it very well. You're very good at looking over your shoulder and reaching your hand back and saying, you can come too. I don't think everyone does that, and there is something really special about the people that say, oh my gosh, did you think you couldn't come?
Yeah.
Like, you can come here.
Yes.
Like, I see you. There's room for you.
Yes.
We'll slow down and wait for you.
Yes.
Something so great about the person that is walking out their gifts that also looks over their shoulder and doesn't say, what's your problem?
Like, oh, yeah.
You'll catch up or you'll figure it out. There's something so beautiful about someone saying, you too.
Absolutely. That's my favorite. That's my favorite. Yeah.
And I think you do that. And there's a weight of responsibility that I think also comes with that, because it can get tiring to be a leader. It can get tiring. You have to do things that fill yourself back up, right? Like you have to make sure. I just think there can be a weight of responsibility. And so maybe the better way to say, what is the hardest part for you for being a guide, and what gives you the most joy?
That's wonderful. Well, I think what gives me the most joy, I'll start with that, is the online platform, because for years it was moving, teaching in different places around the world and trying to create the environment. And I'm definitely a highly sensitive person and introvert. And so the energy and exertion to hold the space in places that weren't my own and try to create magic and enveloping safety in the space, that was draining and challenging at times. In-person aspect, there's always a little separateness as a teacher to the students. There's always that little that you're seeing them connecting and reading and writing and being heard and seen together, which is what I'm trying to make the space for them to connect. But you're still a little bit on the outside as a teacher, which was fine for years, but I now see how different having this online platform is, where I can hold the space for people and then I can have my life back a little quicker. Mm-hmm. energetically, it's just it's a little bit of a separation there that makes myself feel so much more capable of giving to more people and conserves my energy. And I've kind of resisted it for years because I thought the technology, I'm like, how can I make something that is just as inspiring and random and wild as my in-person workshops are? And I thought, how can I, you know, free people through the computer? And I just set out to make the course that I want to find and make it as random and wild and coming at it sideways as possible. So that's been something that I really, really have been grateful for. It's only been the past year and a half that I've been doing that, and it feels great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What space do you think creatives are holding for others at this time in history?
Oh, it's a powerful time. I think I had written down, I was thinking about, you know, just there's so much emotion to be that people are feeling. And so any way that people can help make a vessel for that. And I think our creative thinking and our inventive minds to use that to navigate through how we can help and how we can be of service. And, you know, some of the greatest art comes out of times like this. So to lean into it and to lean into the emotion that's there and not be, not trying to make things the same, like it's not the same, and it's not about making things pretty. You know, it's like the course I'm doing, Full Color Life, right now. It's not about like full color life, like all the rainbows, like the full color of our lives. And that's all these murky, dark tones too. And all this, there's muckiness in that and embracing all of that to live fuller into your life. So, I want to help keep people get awake and stay awake but also rest a little deeper into their own self.
I think we're all creative, but I think that not everybody is tapped into their creativity. And so when you have the gift, when a person, if you're listening and you have that gift that you can tap into your creativity, there are people around you that actually need to hear through words, through music, through art, to almost see it reflected back to them, real emotion that maybe they don't know how to articulate through words, through music, through art, in a million other ways of creativity. And I think that's actually what's so good too. Like the creatives that can say, this feels awful. Or, you know, or this is actually how I found hope, or this is the beauty I found today, even though like I had to search for it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a gift to everybody else around us that just they're not sure how to tap into it. When creatives share in all times, but especially these times, I just think it's just a gift, not to ourselves, not just for ourselves, but for other people too. And so just, you know, so I think that's too, like what you're doing too. You're still showing up. You're still putting things out. And then other people are able to say, I feel that. And I connect with that. And I don't even know why. And thank you for showing up in that way. Well, at 23, you published your first book. And since then, you've offered everything from live workshops, more books, online courses, a podcast, short films, and more. So tell me how you collaborate with others. Because when I look at all of this, I want to know how you choose to collaborate. Are these natural endeavors for you? Or are there things that you have to work towards? Like, what are some of your strengths in a collaboration, and what are you looking for before you can say yes to something?
Great question. I'd like something that excites me and sort of scares me at the same time. That's something like that I don't know. I like to work with people that do stuff that I can't do, mm-hmm. so that I think there's so much ignition in that. In that coming together. So I love collaborating. I love, like, in my podcast with my friend Trent, he was, you know, is a friend from high school, and we're the opposite, and he has four daughters and lives in LA and is Mormon. And I love his angle on things, and you know, I have a deep faith, and but there's, you know, I'm not Mormon, and how we can talk about our own spirituality and our own creative, you know, he's someone who's really organized and knows a lot about different materials. And I'm just like, whatever, use the house paint, you know, I don't really even, you know, so for the first time in my life this year, I actually bought nice acrylic paint and have them in these bottles that are labeled, even though they're just this is a big step for me, you know, because I'm like, whatever. And that's what's funny when teaching, because if people say, what's the supply list? I'm like, okay, let's just, where do we even begin? It's just stuff. So
yeah.
That's been, I really like that, because it's just creatively you can really be isolated. And so I love, you know, and I love film, and I think one day would definitely like to make a film. I've filmed a lot of my years there were some wild years, like 2008, from 2005 to 2009. I mean, I was living along the central coast of California in the Redwoods, and, you know, driving my old Mazda Miata down with the roof that had flown off on the freeway, and just some craziness. I'm really glad, because I was definitely late to the game as far as social media goes, and I'm okay with that, you know, because I was just, after doing the five books, I was like, I need to, or it was four at that time, and like, I need to, you know, cut loose, and I called it the True Living Project, and I just, I'm really glad I got that time under my belt. So, for me, that really felt like I was collaborating with nature, mm-hmm. And the elements.
Mm-hmm.
So, so as far as films go, I definitely would love to be. My father's a filmmaker, and I just love that medium.
Yeah, that'd be really fun to see how you would take all of your creativity in that direction. Well, you currently live in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And this is not too far from the rural area of Illinois, where I grew up.
Oh. So
what brought you from California to Wisconsin, and what do you love about living along the water?
It is so random that I'm here. It's got to be a God thing, because I'm in Wisconsin. So I love it here, but I'll just mention how I got here. Was I was living in the West Coast. I was living in Portland, and I was doing a series of workshops that was going to be one in Chicago, one in Madison, one in Minneapolis. And so didn't know anybody here. A wonderful girl named Betsy, who had taken a workshop of mine in LA, lives here. And she's like, well, I'll help coordinate it. So off I go, and I take the bus up here from Chicago. And as soon as I got here, there was an energy and a calm and a peace that I, and a certain sense of light, because it's on, Madison is on the isthmus, so it's got these two lakes beside each other, and so the light that reflects off the lake. And I remember going to the hardware store to get the house paint, the primary house colors for the workshop. Was just need to go to the hardware store, never at the art supply store. And just it was creaky wooden floors, and there were dogs that were lying out on the porch, and I'm like, this just feels so good to me. And I said to the people in the workshop, I said, I'm going to move here. And I moved there here a year later. I left all my stuff in storage in Portland and brought my two dogs here with nothing, and just sort of started again and never have left. And this is the longest I've lived anywhere in my life. And I moved to the lake, along this lake, about a year and a half ago. And it is such a blessing to live in this space, to watch the moon rise over this lake is unbelievable.
Mm.
Yeah.
From what I can see about your relationship with Sean, your partner, it appears you are a wonderful complement to one another. How have you each brought out the best in each other and accomplished goals that were not possible without the support and love of each other?
I was talking to him yesterday. I read him the question, and, you know, we both really feel like this relationship is such a healing relationship for both of us. I think the biggest accomplishment is that it's made us have a safe place to really be ourselves, and to realize that we are just as we are is wonderful as part, to be a part. We complement each other in that way, where neither one of us feels we have to change who we are to be together. Mm-hmm. And, we are, you know, he's a Virgo. He's very organized and detail oriented. And he's a carpenter. And just the sweetness of how different, and, you know, the way I do stuff. And like I said, babe, I've been living like a cowboy for years. Like you know, there were early years in my 20s where I just had all together, and I was about 25, and I had all the stuff, and I had the da-da-da, and then I went, screw it, at a certain point. I was like, I just kind of let it all go, and I needed to. And so he's just, you know, it's wonderfully, like, just coming down to just even, it's funny with washing dishes. Like, I'm like, I've been living alone, and I'll just, like, kind of rinse it out. But I'm like, it's not like I'm going to eat this. Like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter to me. And he has this wonderful way of washing dishes, and it's very, you know, very impressive. And he'll, you know, anyway, he's so sweet about, you know, he doesn't get upset at all, but it's just funny. I'm like, babe, I just, there's a lot of things I do that I'm not really paying attention. And it's not intentional, but I am up here in my creative mind, and he's able to really roll with that. And so one thing I've loved, he just started filming with me, which has been really amazing, because I've held back doing that, or I've just filmed by myself, but it's been fun to, I feel really comfortable with him behind the camera, and that we've only been doing it the past couple of weeks, because in my class, I'm like, shoot, I've got to do this demo. So I'm like, babe, can you just film this? And so I'm on the floor, like, mixing paints, and I've got to take my ring off. And I put on these pajama pants, and I'm like, it's all, and I'm wheeling in a table from the back room. And then I'm like, oh shoot, I don't have space. I'll do it on the carpet. And I showed it to my students. I'm thinking, they are going to think I am just off my rocker. Like, this is the weirdest demo ever. And they loved it. And they felt just this freedom of knowing, like, yeah, this is how you kind of, I'm like, I'm not in some state of the art studio. And this is how a jerry-rigged creative experience happens.
Yeah.
And just to see the light in my face making this kind of mess on the floor was I think really helpful for people to see. And so we're kind of going with that rhythm. I'm like, and I love it because he's watching and he's going, oh yes. And then I smear past it. He's like, oh, okay. You know, I'm like, it's about the process. It's not about what he's like, I see a whale. I'm like, babe, there's never going to be an animal. There's never going to be that in the piece. But he's continually, like, yesterday he saw my dog, you know, Lucy, who passed away. He said, I see Lucy. I'm like, I love that. And I also, you know, and then I wipe past it so the dog's gone. I mean, I think I saved that piece, but yeah.
Do you think you would have jumped into online courses without the collaboration of even Sean and his gifts?
Well, we didn't come together till after that. So I'd already, so we've only been together for about a year and a half.
Like, okay. So it was right around that time that you were starting to get into online classes.
Yep. I'd done the first round of Liberate.
Okay.
Finished that.
Yeah. Oh, that is so fun. How did you find yourself navigating your business differently this past year during COVID?
Well, I think at first I thought, you know, because I was all set to launch in that beginning of April, and then it hit, and I thought, well, you know, it's just too much going on. And I had this wonderful, a wonderful friend had said, you know, you've got to, if you have a boat, like, let people get on it, you know, just make the space and show up anyways. And so I did, and I'm glad I did, because I think people, you know, there's a gift in all of this in some ways. There's a lot of loss, and also just it is a strange, weird time to reflect, and people need release. So I just continue to show up, and that's given me some structure and a base to feel like I can be of service in some form. And so, and also being grateful, because it had only been a year since I was doing all in-person workshops, so I would have been really screwed. Because, you know, I would have been completely dependent on all these different retreats all over the place. So to be able to have this platform now has been really, really a blessing. And I just love, I can help people that are all over the world.
Oh yeah. The reach, the net of who you can include is so much greater.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take away the value of live workshops. It just makes it different. And I love that your friend said, if you have a boat, like, make room for others and, you know, let them come on too. And that's really, such a beautiful way to look at whatever your giftings are.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you have to share with the world, It's not something that you just because things are hard, because things can be hard always, right? There's always something going on. And so, well, I wanted to ask, what advice do you have for other entrepreneurs as we go into 2021?
I think about just being bold, like going, you know, seize the day, that this is the time. We don't, you know, it shows us more than ever that we are in a time where, you know, who knows what's going to happen. So do it anyway, you know, go forth. And I'm a big fan of, you know, I believe I've always said the story's happening. So it's like, the story's happening, trust the unfolding, and do something that's a little wild and bolder than you you imagined.
And I love that the story is happening. What super strength do you think creatives have in these unexpected times? And I think we've kind of talked about this in different ways, but just to really get focused here, kind of at the end of our time together, for people listening that are creatives and maybe are feeling lost and how do I use what I have and do people even want what I have? I mean, what do you have to say to them?
I say trust your creative thinking and ask for help. I think we can get stopped and project onto other people that they've all know how to figure it out and they know how to, I mean, the amount of years I've spent going, they figured it out and I don't know how to figure this out and I don't know who to ask. And I mean, it's just part of the cycle of what I mean, even today I'm thinking, you know, my voice is always, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do that. So I have to overcome that voice and go, well, do it anyways and step forward and invent your way through, do it your way and ask questions. And I think that, I also think that simplifying, you know, there's parts of me that like, I want to do a textile line so much and I want to do, you know, I don't have any of my art for sale anywhere. And I'm like, I might as well, I should probably be, but I'm like, I don't, there's only so much I can actually focus on. So for me, you know, like right now it's about being of service to other people and helping them, you know, bring their color and their words and their stories into the world. And trusting there's a time, like there's no rush to get somewhere. So in the right time that will unfold, just, you know, in a little, that will reveal itself too. So I think, being gentle with yourself and just starting with one thing and, you know, put on some music, get in your art outfit, get comfortable, cozy socks, and, you know, make for it to feel good.
Well, I'd love to close with one last question. If you were not an author and artist, what would your alternative career choice be?
Well, I love home. So I think to be a home designer would be something I would love to do that's still in the arts. And of course, and I always loved fashion and textiles. Be another thing. When I was little, I always wanted to be an archaeologist. I always felt like that.
I did too.
You did? That was my first. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Archaeology magazine. Like I was the dorky teenager with, you know, my archaeology magazine for real. Yes.
That's awesome.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my first. I always thought I was finding little remains of, you know, Indian treasures along the pathways and things like that. So,
but don't you think though, as an adult though, I feel still like an excavator. Like I feel like I feel like revealing things even in myself or with other people. I love history though. So I just think it's still like those little quirky things about us can still just be these really cool things that set us apart even when we get older. So
that's so true. I love that connection.
And I like knowing that about you too. All right. Would you please tell our listeners where they can find you, any new classes you have coming up, where they can find your books, and anything more about upcoming events?
Sure. And probably the best way to find me is on Instagram at Sabrina Ward Harrison. And there's links in my profile to different things I've got going on. I have Liberate's going to open its doors again on January 15th. So that's creating the book you most want to find. And it's an in-depth creative mentorship program with me. And I probably will be offering Full Color Life again this coming spring. And I have a free 30-minute guided journaling, free writing experience that people can get. I can give you a link to that, or the link would be in my Instagram. And I have a podcast called Room in the Trees that you can find on iTunes about living a creative life. And then my books, I don't have any copies. You can probably find them on Amazon. There's some used ones left, but they're out there doing their thing in the world. So I don't, I don't have any.
Well, and we'll have, guys, we'll have all of this under the notes for the podcast, so you can easily get all the links also, so you can look at her new classes and her books and more information. But Sabrina, thank you. Thanks for just being here today, sharing so freely and giving us such a sweet glimpse into just your process and your heart for guiding others. It's really been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Jean. It's great to be here.
I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day today like I was. Go to jeanoliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at jeanoliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. We have over 150 courses from teachers around the world. Thank you for joining me this week. Don't forget to let us know what you thought of this week's podcast, and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.